knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight.
I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work. Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
You brought me all this Halloween candy.
Yay!
That's a very nice. Halloween is upon us. I was going to get dressed up, but I decided not to put in the effort.
Yeah, fair enough.
That would be a payoff that was quite small.
Wouldn't be good enough.
But yeah, I was out in my lobby, and I ran into some kids in costumes,
mm-hmm.
and they remembered it was Halloween, and then it struck me that I wasn't going to have any candy. So it was very nice that you brought some nerds. I'm a little suspicious about these warheads.
Yeah.
I'm worried about this.
Yeah.
Cause I'm not a huge sour guy.
I was thinking as I was going through stuff, I was like, what is something that Dan would be like, I wouldn't do this
mm-hmm.
on his own.
Trying to push the boundaries.
I'm trying to open and see what you got, what you wouldn't choose, but you would choose if you had known you should have chosen it.
Okay, well, I'll put you to the test.
That's what I'm saying.
While you are telling me what your bright spot is,
I got plenty.
I will try one of these.
Give it a shot. My bright spot is I went to a World Series baseball game. It was a gift given to me by my wife's mom's. It was one of those perfect experiences. It really was, where like if you're given a gift to somebody that's an experience, you want them to have, first off, you want them to have a good experience. You don't want them to suddenly be like, I'm not going to respond to your face. to the audience, his face, it is not going well. This is not a candy that this man would choose.
Was one of my eyes twitching a little bit?
This is a perfect example of what I'm not describing. When you get somebody something, you want them to enjoy it, mm-hmm. and you want it, and if it's an experience, you know, there's so many things that could go wrong that are just outside your control. You
get someone ballet tickets and the person, the lead dies
something,
on stage.
Yeah, any number of things. Or just like, oh, the flight was delayed, mm-hmm. and even though the game is still gonna happen, I'm not gonna fly back and fly, you know, that whole thing. Any number of things could go wrong, or some terrible thing could just mess up the experience, and then when you go to talk to the person about it, you're like, well, I had a great time, except,
but,
yeah.
Thank
then,
you, I appreciate your generosity, but also,
totally.
I had the worst time ever.
This was the worst day of my life. Thank you, everything you mean was amazing.
I lost a day, and I've come away scarred.
Yeah. But this was just great.
Yeah.
From beginning to end, people in New York City are very nice. They're very nice.
You heard it here first.
I think all of these cities that we've been to, and I've been to a lot now around the world, that have this idea of like, our pride and our city is tough.
Mm-hmm.
You just have hunger. You're hungry. Feed people. Everybody's nice when they're not hungry.
Yeah.
Just feed people.
I guess that's probably true. I mean, you're just basically turning sort of a charitable message into a Snickers commercial.
Yeah, no, I'm challenging your city identity as being like, oh, we're tough New Yorkers. You're nice, but you're hungry. Eat something.
Hungry, why wait?
Civic duty. Remove civic pride and replace it with civic everybody's eating.
Chew it over with a Twix.
Oh my God, you're gonna get me killed.
Chew these social issues over with a Twix.
It was a great, great time.
No, that's
it was
awesome.
Perfect.
I'm glad you had a good time, and I'm glad you got to see Otani. You know,
like that's
something that I probably would assume is like if you didn't get to at some point, it would drive you nuts.
I saw him whenever the White Sox played his first year in the league.
I think I actually already knew that, and
but
I
that
apologize
was,
that I forgot.
That was also some COVID stuff, so there was a whole thing going on, and I had lost my job. It was a mess. But
and the Otani of then is not the same superhuman that he is now.
No, he was.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
he was right. In fact, arguably more superhuman because he was still pitching and hitting at the same time.
Sure.
But he hadn't hit 50 home runs and stolen 50 bases. He'd only broken some records at the time, as opposed to the more comprehensive all records that will be broken later.
That is different.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time, but yeah. We talked before the show, and you mentioned that you didn't get a hot dog, and so I'm curious at you.
Peanuts and beer is what you eat at a ballpark.
I am 100% the opposite. I think you need to get a hot dog. I feel like baseball stadiums, they have their hot dogs.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
And it's kind of like a signature thing.
They do. A lot of them, yeah.
But I also have looked them up before, and I think a lot of them look gross.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily want to get one.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like New York's got to be a classic Coney, right? It's got to be a foot-long hot dog.
No.
No?
No, you're not getting that.
Chili dog.
If you wanted that, you would have to go back in time to whenever they didn't charge you $7,000 for the size of that.
Mm.
You
only $7,000 for a hot dog?
Only $7,000 in New York!
Can't believe that city's
hungry.
I mean,
it's crazy.
So, Jordan, today we have an episode to go over.
Yes.
Where I said on the last episode we're gonna get up to current. But here's the issue.
Okay.
What does that mean?
That is a really good question.
Today's current is not tomorrow's current.
True.
It doesn't matter.
True.
So we've taken a Zen approach to being up to date towards the election.
Right, right, right. Where we are is only time-based in relation to how fast everybody is moving.
Mm-hmm.
So in a theoretical sense, we're just moving slower,
right,
thereby making time and distance the same.
Definitely.
Yep.
So we're going to be talking about October 25th through 28th. This is a little bit of time where Trump has gone on Rogan, and also
God,
Trump
right.
does his Madison Square Garden rally.
That's right, the Nazi rally, yeah.
Well, not according to Alex.
Oh, okay.
So we'll get down to business on this, but before we do, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new walks.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
So first, goodbye, Dr. Jones. There's a hole in your logic. You who knew all the answers. Thank you so much. You're now Policy Walk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Carl in New Zealand. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Zephod Beeblebrox ate Dan's family's ice cream and loved it. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we got a technocrat in the mix, Jordan. So thank you so much to Dave in Canberra. You're not alone in your fight against cancer. Lean on the people around you for love and support. We're all here for you. Love, Kai. Thank you so much. You're now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Go get him, Dave.
Yeah.
So we start off this episode on the 25th. And that is the day that Trump is going to be on Rogan.
Right.
The episode comes out later in the day.
Uh-huh.
It hasn't happened yet. And I do want to make one thing clear. I haven't played these clips because I don't really care.
Okay.
But Alex has been ahead of the story that Trump was going to be on Rogan.
Right.
He did know in advance.
Yeah.
And he talked about it pretty openly, saying, some source told me that Trump is going to be on Rogan.
I mean, it was me, yeah.
Before anyone knew.
Sure.
So, like, he actually did have that inside scoop.
He should. He should have. If he didn't, then fuck him even more.
Right, yeah. Right. But I just want to say, I didn't play any of those clips, and I want to give him a, like, oh, he had the scoop on this one.
Right,
his
right,
friend
right.
told him a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His friend is the guy who, well, shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, Harris, though, Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
She's too afraid.
Of course.
Trump is crisscrossing the nation. It's amazing. He's on Joe Rogan now in the afternoon today. It wasn't going to be this morning. Now it starts about 1 p.m. today. They're going to tape it. They don't usually go live. They have technical difficulties sometimes. I get it. Life's hard. And it should be out by 4 o'clock this afternoon, right down the street from here. I have the inside baseball on that. Kamala Harris, here's the headline, is barnstorming Texas. Why is Kamala Harris barnstorming Texas? But she's not going on Joe Rogan. Yep, she chickened out. But so they wouldn't say that. They continued to change the times and change the days over and over again. And then just didn't respond to Rogan. I was told, not by Rogan. Sources. So he totally chickened out.
I think Rogan told him that.
Yeah, that would probably make sense.
I don't think it's a winning idea for her to go on Rogan. I don't think she stands to gain a large, portion of whatever audience she might reach that way. Like, I don't know. Is Trump expected to go on Call Her Daddy?
I don't know. I mean, what are we going to do? It's hard not to look at that and be like, oh, well, the lady choice went on the lady podcast and the dude choice went on the dude podcast. Great. Mm-hmm. Great, everybody. We're an eighth grade dance of a country.
I think that
Crushing it. That
is an unfortunate optic thing that you're looking at. But I also think that, at least in the case of Harris,
sure,
I'm not certain she could have a productive conversation on Rogan's podcast.
Okay.
I think she could on Call Her Daddy.
Sure.
Whereas, I don't know if Trump could have a productive conversation anywhere.
I was going to say, is the Rogan podcast where you go for productive conversation? What if she went on there and shit talked for a while? That would do more than if she had a policy position. Fuck off.
Maybe, but I think that you could make, I don't know if that works into, like, for her benefit though, going on there and talking a bunch of shit. Maybe it would.
I mean, at this point, nobody is doing anything for their benefit, from what I could see. Everyone is behaving as dumb as possible.
Well, I would counter the framing that Alex has of, like, she chickened out.
Yeah,
I think it might be a decent decision.
Yeah.
I think if I were in her campaign, I could hear an argument to go on and to not.
Sure.
I think that there's decent reasons to do either.
Yeah, I think if she was not her, going on would make sense, but since she is her, it wouldn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, the Madison Square Garden rally is coming up, right? Mm-hmm. And, I don't know why, you said it was a Nazi rally.
It's a weird thing to mention.
And Alex does not appreciate that kind of tone.
Strange.
He thinks you're a dick, honestly.
Feels like a Nazi
and
rally.
And you've got every channel, every major newspaper, I've just got stacks of them right here. Trump is going to use the military on you. Trump is going to kill you. And then when Trump starts rounding up the MS-13 gangs and others and deporting their criminal asses, the left's going to activate them to rise up. Everybody knows it. You've seen it, and now they've pre-programmed for it. And you talk about thin, no connection to Hitler. In the 30s, the American Nazi Party, the Bund, had a rally at Madison Square Garden. There's famous black and white footage of it. And so now, because Trump is going to have a rally in New York, something the Clintons have done, the Bushes have done, Obama's done at Madison Square Garden, well, he's at the same building, so he is Hitler. Wow, that's really powerful information. That's like saying, have you ever walked in a county courthouse for a court hearing on taxes or something, and you walk through the same doors that a child molester has or a murderer? You are now the murderer.
Whoa, thin, no connection to Hitler. Who's he talking about, the Slender Man?
I would argue that perhaps the difference between the rallies previous that were held by the Clintons mm-hmm. and Obamas and the Bushes, were not Nazi rallies for one reason only. They did not invite a lot of Nazis to those rallies.
That's one, definite difference.
Yeah. Whereas this rally, huge invitee list, all Nazis.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you kind of do got to give him a little bit of credit for the basis of the argument, which is that if you host a rally at Madison Square Garden, that doesn't make you a Nazi.
That is true.
We begin from a kernel of agreement.
Agreed.
It's just a venue. You
yep.
could host any kind of thing you want there.
Basketball, even.
So if you want to make the argument that this event is reminiscent of the 1939 Madison Square Garden meeting of the American Bund, then what you would need to do, and I think this is kind of what you're attempting to do
sure,
here.
Sure.
You need to illustrate that this is more deeply entwined with that American Bund history.
Right. Perhaps there are more similarities.
And what type of parallels exist between these two, beyond the easily ignorable surface-level fact that they took place at the same venue?
Sure.
So I'm going to ask you this, Jordan.
Yeah.
Who said this? Quote, Americanism should be returned to the Christians who founded it. We must defy those who turned this country into a Bolshevik paradise.
Yeah.
Was that somebody from Trump's rally?
Right.
Or was that in 1939?
All right. So was it Lindbergh or Gorka? Is that the game we're playing?
I'm asking you.
I'm going to go with, there's no way to tell beyond 50-50. So I'm going to go with, present day.
Hmm. It was Fritz Kuhn, the leader of the American Bund at his Madison Square Garden rally in 1939. But it's essentially the same message that animates the current Trump movement and the rally that he held at the same location.
Yeah, I guess the only difference would be maybe they wouldn't use the word Bolshevik as
maybe
much.
Maybe not.
But even still, they still use the word Bolshevik sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are aesthetic differences that you can point out that are fair. There were a lot more swastikas in 1939,
sure.
And there were a lot of Nazi salutes going on. The speeches were very overt in how much they hated Jewish people, and they blamed Jewish people for every wrong in the world. And that sort of messaging doesn't work well publicly for Trump people in 2024. But if you strip away a little of that aesthetic cover, you'll see how similar these two events were from a content perspective. If you just substitute the word globalist for Jewish and patriotic for Gentile, it's really hard to tell a lot of these messages what rally you're at. For instance, Kuhn, in his address at the 1939 event, he ended that with a list of platforms that he's fighting for. And one of the main ones is, quote, Gentiles in all positions of importance in government, national defense, and educational institutions. Swap that one word out and you have the same messaging at both rallies there.
Sure.
But here are some of his platforms that you don't even need to swap the words out. Gun to your head. Try and imagine, like, if you could make a confident decision whether these were from the present day or from the American Bund rally
All right.
in 1939. Quote, outlawing of the Communist Party in the United States, prosecution of all known communists for high treason.
No clue.
Quote, immediate cessation of the dumping of all political refugees on the shores of the United States.
I mean, no clue.
Quote, a thorough cleaning of the Hollywood film industries of all alien subversive activities.
I think that one actually was 1939.
It was, but it,
I think that one I do know.
Subversive, that's a dated
say,
word.
It's the
but,
language.
Yeah.
they don't know how to use it's, that word it, anymore.
It's not the idea of what it's pushing for, it's
right,
the word.
Right, exactly.
Quote, cessation of all abuse of the freedom of the pulpit, press, radio, and stage.
I mean, I don't think they're using stage these days.
No.
No.
Quote, a return of our government to the policies of George Washington. Aloofness from foreign entanglements. Severance of all connections with the League of Nations.
Sure, sure.
That's also dated because of the League of Nations.
The League of Nations,
but
yeah.
You put
yeah.
the EU, UN
I mean, it's no way, there's no way to compare the League of Nations to some sort of United Nations that exists currently that would also be able to, like, mad libs its way around.
Yeah, so Fritz Kuhn laid out 8 policy platforms at the end of his speech, and I could make a very strong argument that 7 of them are directly mirrored by the Trump messaging.
And the other one was segregation now, segregation forever, right?
No, that was another guy that
Oh,
that was
a different guy? Okay.
Yeah. So one of these platforms is about Gentiles controlling labor unions, which I think it's a little bit murky in terms of present-day conservative politics around labor.
Sure.
But if you completely ignore that one, there's still 7 out of 8 that are directly mirrored by Trump.
Sure.
This is the more important reason that people compare Trump's rally to the 1939 Bund rally. It's not because they took place at the same venue. It's because they were working toward a common cause. Trump's people made the decision to hold this rally at Madison Square Garden, at least in part because they were aware of these very obvious optics and were playing into it somewhat. And on an optics level, it's really easy to hand wave away the similarities, the way Alex is doing here. However, on a more meaningful level, Trump's rally is the spiritual successor to this Bund rally.
Yeah.
And part of making those optics obvious is that someone trying to play defense like Alex just has to say, oh, because they're at the same
yeah.
place?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
all of a sudden, if you don't think through the argument that you're making, you might be like, oh, there's some pushback. I'm gonna abandon this line of thought.
Yeah.
Because Alex has now made me feel stupid.
Yeah, it's the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation from, Douglas Adams. The superficial flaws are so bad that they mask the fundamental horrible flaws within.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I don't have much else to say other than like it was-
They did a Nazi rally. Hey, everybody!
if in form and function, it's tough to really look at it any other way. So Alex has some beliefs about what the Dems are going to do.
Sorry, I was just remembering some of the interviews that I did.
So
I'm the idiot.
So Trump is going to win.
Yeah.
And then the Dems, what they're going to do is they're not going to certify the election.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Trump tried to do last time.
Right.
But they're planning to do it now.
Right.
The Democrats have said in their policy reports and statements that they are going to not certify Trump, hold up the election in the key battleground states and blue cities they control with their election officials, put in by Soros, who get rewarded to be the governors of Arizona after they steal the elections from Kerry Lake and Trump, the American people. They're just duplicating it everywhere. Kamala will then sit and decide on the non-certification of Trump as the VP. They've already announced they're planning to do that. And you say, well, how will they politically get away with that? During the contested election that they now say will go on for several weeks after November 5th, in the 76 days of hell, you've heard me harping on for years, this was coming, now we're here. And the political experts on with me, oh, Alex, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Well, if you're not going to expose the enemy's plan, you're going to lose. That's why we're tomorrow's news today. You don't think the globalists aren't projecting out in the future and planning for the future? And you go where you want to go and you win in the present by planning and preparing the future. But we're trained to live in the moment, aren't we? Well, I certainly enjoy the moment, but I live by studying the past, the present, and then projecting the future. That's what I do. Undoubtedly, hands down, it's just a fact, so people recognize us, we can get out of this, the best futurist in the world. That's really what I am. Not the fake pop future they put out, the real future they want to build, and the globalists are almost in total control, so the dystopia they say they want to build is what we're going to live in if we just sit here and give them all the power.
Sure.
And engage in this abdication of our rights.
I think I played that clip as a whole, just so you could hear him get to that thought in context.
Yep.
Because if you just hear a drop of him saying, hands down, it's just a fact, I'm the best futurist in the human race,
you expect him to say something
like
that.
Yeah, and out of context as just like an isolated drop, it doesn't really have as much oomph.
Right.
Whereas, this is nuts.
Right. It is, you're so right. If he had just said it, you'd be like, oh yeah, this guy's delusional. But after listening to why he said it in this case, you're like, this guy's fucking delusional!
Mm-hmm.
What is happening?
Yeah.
Even his description of the globalist is like, 2 weeks ago, you were like, the globalists are dead forever. They've quit. They're proboscis in the room. Then the day after that, the globalists are back on.
Shit.
You're the one who's making up the globalist plans, and mm-hmm. now you're saying that the planning is what they're great at?
Well, it becomes...
Oh, my God.
It becomes that whole game of, like, he's always been right about everything, because
sure.
the things that didn't happen, he stopped.
Right.
So, like, it's impossible for him to ever have to reckon with how wrong and how dumb he is about everything.
Yeah.
Because he has a built-in, no, I'm a good, smart boy system.
It is like, that is kind of indicative of the world though, of just like that theory. We should have long-term plans. Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
You're the reason we don't.
Mm.
That is you who is keeping us from having long-term plans, not me. I am not standing in the way of long-term plans happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that really I've been thinking about with Alex is that, like, there's no continuity with
right.
reality. Like, reality doesn't have continuity.
Yeah.
And because of that, nothing has continuity into the future either.
Yep.
It's very untethered. It's
yep.
kind of scary.
Yep.
So Alex knows that the globalists are going to frame his side with violence.
Sure.
Because a bunch of his friends are probably talking about how they're
very violent people.
Ready to be violent.
Yeah.
And so are we just going to sit here and be reactive when they pull all this? They're already stealing it. with the Google manipulation, with the election meddling, with the censorship, that's where the real steal goes on. Then with all the phantom voters and dead people and illegals that they're ordering to stay on the ballot, the out-of-control feds, and extending it out for weeks and weeks and weeks after the election, and then telling you the script that Trump supporters aren't going to accept this and they're going to get violent, so they will provide the violence to frame us. It is not a prediction. It is a fact. It's like if you're standing by a river and there's a town a mile away and the river's flowing at 6 miles an hour. You can calculate what time that water is going to arrive in the town. It's not a prediction that that water is going to flow downstream to the town. It's a fact. So, they fired the bullet out of the gun. It's coming towards us of civil unrest. They're going to call it a civil war. They're going to make it race-based. And to provide the impetus, they will need horrible events killing Hispanics, blacks, all the groups the Democrats say they want to protect from Trump. That's it. Like if you watch Mom get out pancake mix.
Oh, God. Here we go.
And milk and an egg. And you've seen her do it 200 times. You've helped her do it. And you're watching her whip it up, and she gets the griddle out and puts butter on it. And you go, Mom, what are you going to make? She goes, I'm going to make pancakes, sweetheart. You know that. Well, we're in the process now where we watch them get the mix, get the egg, get the milk, stir it up, the griddle's on, and they're already pouring pancakes. But they're not pouring pancakes, they're pouring tyranny.
Oh no, they're pouring tyranny. So as has happened a bunch of times in his career, Alex is currently really worried about the possibility that the extremists and bigots on his side are about to resort to violence. It's kind of hard to imagine that there aren't a lot of groups on the far right that feel like they have no possible outlet available to them if Trump loses, so it's very understandable where Alex's concern could be coming from. Large-scale acts of domestic terrorism are generally unpopular with the voting public, and sometimes atrocities committed against our fellow civilians can have the effect of shaking people out of their complacency and making them realize how bad things have gotten. Alex came of age in a militia extreme right-wing community that had been decimated by the public waking up to the threat that they posed after the OKC bombing, so he's acutely aware of how bad that thing can be for business. So he doesn't want that, but he actually kind of does. Or at least he wants his enemies to remember that if his side doesn't get their way, that domestic terrorism is right around the corner. That implicit threat to blow up a federal building, politically, is one of the only reasons his side is taken seriously at all. You see the shit that's going on at these Trump rallies and the insane stuff that he says on a regular basis, and then see the way that the media covers him, and it's not hard to remember how a Trump supporter sent a bomb to CNN headquarters in 2018, around the time that all the folks in Alex's media sphere were trying to make money selling CNN his ISIS shirts.
Sure.
Like, you know, this implied threat is always important to keep in the background
sure.
for folks like Alex.
Sure.
We've talked about this dynamic a lot, where Alex knows that the possibility for violence among his community members is high, so he stresses how likely a false flag that will be blamed on them is right now. It's a tired rhetorical strategy that's just a preemptive attempt at damage control for any violence that may happen, but I want to touch on the analogies that he uses to explain how he can tell that false flag racist violence is coming.
Sure.
He uses a river flowing and his mom making pancakes as two comparable situations. And I think they both don't make his point, but might sound good enough if you're not paying attention. The issue is that what Alex is doing is being very loose about cause-effect relationships in order to make the fraudulent point that he's trying to push. In the river example, if you add water to the river upstream, you can make a fairly educated guess, based on the laws of physics, how long it'll take to reach a certain point downstream. That's fair enough, but it's very difficult to take a cup of water from that point downstream and make the same claim that someone must have added this water to the river at a certain point upstream. You can calculate how long it would take if someone had done that based on physics, but that's about it. You're trying to play a game backwards.
Sure.
The pancakes example is even worse. If you see someone gathering the ingredients for pancakes, you can assume they're making pancakes, but they might also be making something with similar ingredients, like waffles or muffins. The gathering of the ingredients is the cause, and the presentation of pancakes is the effect. So if you see the gathering of the ingredients, you can assume that pancakes will be presented. It's already clear how this doesn't always hold, but if you invert things, you can kind of see what Alex is doing. He wants you to see the effect, the presentation of pancakes, and assume that he was right about his claims that the globalists have been gathering the ingredients, and this is the cause for the presentation of these pancakes. But in reality, tons of people in Alex's community have been talking about pancakes lately. They really want pancakes and think that Trump is their last opportunity to legally obtain these pancake ingredients. So if he loses, they might just have to make these pancakes themselves. Alex knows that pancakes, or in this case, acts of domestic terrorism, likely racial in nature, are it's more likely than normal circumstances. He knows that a pancake is going to show up eventually, and he's going to have to explain it, since his show is mostly about yelling about how great pancakes are and how sometimes the waffle of liberty has to be watered with the syrup of tyrants.
Sure.
That
water's tyranny, buddy. They're pouring tyranny.
Yeah.
That's not pancake batter.
Nope. He's taking an effect and branding it with a plausible cause his audience can run with to feel less guilt about being part of a world that's based on making pancakes. And the business model involves the creation of pancakes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I might have gone a little off track with the metaphor.
No. You got there. Mm-hmm. You hit it. I just love a good metaphor that ends with you like being very clear that the whole metaphor part was a waste of everybody's time. Whenever you just explain, like, the pancake batter's tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. You could have cut out the whole long meandering part where your mom was talking.
Mom's making pancakes.
Nope, didn't need
it. But it ain't your mom, it's
didn't
the globalist,
it.
And that pancake, it's
done.
Tyranny.
Done. Okay. You explained it, thereby negating the entire point of the metaphor.
Yeah. So he sees the ingredients being laid out.
Sure.
Right? So he knows that they're gonna make pancakes.
The ingredients are tyranny, though.
It's a tyranny pancake, buddy.
Yes. Okay.
You're just gonna have to deal with that.
Just to be clear, I just want to be sure about where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It is, gluten-free tyranny.
Well, that's nice. I mean, at least there's some positives.
So you would kind of want to assess, like, alright, you're the greatest futurist ever, and let's hear some of this predictive ability.
Yeah!
We have to talk about the fact that the steel is on, and they don't think that's gonna work, so they're just gonna hold up the election, and gin up civil unrest and say it's Trump's fault, which they've already said is going to happen. And we better start wargaming what we're going to do in 10 days when this goes down. Or that's their whole movement. That's their preparation. That's what they're angling for. That's the main attack. Or they're going to steal Texas because Texas isn't watching closely enough and flip the whole country that way.
Usually works for Texas.
I feel a disturbance in the force on that one. I think that it's those two scenarios. Or things just get out of hand and somebody makes a wrong move.
Or another scenario.
It looks like a missile launch, but it's not. And Russia starts nuking, or NATO starts nuking, or North Korea starts nuking, or China starts nuking, or there's an incident in the South China Sea, or China goes into Taiwan. I mean, it's all on the table. And I just try to want to, I just want to get the public to talk about the big issues going down.
This was a masterclass by history and humanity's number one futurist. The way he can so effortlessly rattle off mutually exclusive scary possibilities for things that can happen and totally not come off like someone making it up as he goes along, that's a true talent. So here are the possibilities.
Sure.
One, the steal 2024 is not going well, so they delay the results of the election being announced so they can do some false flags to blame Trump supporters and then start a civil war.
Done.
Two, stop the steal, it's just the steal.
It's just the steal.
The steal 2024 does work.
Yep.
But specifically in Texas.
Right.
Which the Dems then flip to win the election outright.
It happened.
Three, things get out of hand and quote, someone makes a wrong move.
There you go.
That's a possibility.
Could be anything.
Four, there's a missile false alarm and Russia starts nuking people.
Why not?
Five, there's a missile false alarm and NATO starts nuking people.
Why not?
Six, North Korea starts nuking people.
Why not?
Seven, China starts nuking people.
That one's crazy.
Eight, there's an incident in the South China Sea.
Now that one, obviously.
Nine, China invades Taiwan.
Sure.
This is truly the mark of a man who is not just talking shit. Nine possible things that could happen. What a futurist.
Here are the things that could happen. Mm-hmm. Damn near anything, except for good things. Good things can not happen, so you should be afraid.
Until tomorrow when the proboscis makes a move.
Well, then good things can happen. You should be happy, and you should buy things from me.
All this being said, I do think that things getting out of hand and someone making a wrong move is an evergreen prediction.
That is...
That's something you could throw in all the time, and... It's probably going to happen.
I would not be happy if my fortune teller came up with that as the possible future.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, not a very good fortune.
Nope. But number one futurist.
Could be.
So Marjorie Taylor Greene's coming back on the show.
Great.
Making a lot of time for this dumb show.
Weird.
I found this clip funny.
All right. MTG scheduled to be on. She's on the road. She's going to pull over somewhere and try to Skype in or... FaceTime in or Zoom in. If there's any problems, we'll talk to her over the phone. I just want to talk to her. I don't care if she's on video or not. I want to get her take on all this insanity. Be a news-making interview. It'll move the needle against the enemy. So that's coming up. We got a special guest in here I had set up months ago. Very interesting. I'll tell you about him when he gets here. I'm so angry I've popped a blood vessel in my eye screaming on air. Give me a close shot. I want to make this a big part of the show. Look at that. That's how angry I am.
This is some strange energy.
Weird.
I want to make a big part of the show, the fact that I popped a blood vessel in my eye.
I don't want any part of that.
And then just rambling about, oh, this is going to be a news-making interview.
I don't want any part of this. I don't want any part of what's going on there.
Feels backstage.
If that is something you would like to do and be part of, I am not going to stop you, obviously. But I don't want to be any part of it.
Strange. It's strange on air.
Yeah.
Look at this fucking blood vessel in my eye.
Yeah. Hey, zoom in on this fucked up eye I got going on here.
I want to make it a big part of the
Goddamn
show.
Goddamn Duchamp.
So, Marjorie Taylor Greene is on.
Uh-huh.
And she thinks the Texas is in play.
Sure.
And I mostly say that because it's exciting to hear that things are in play.
It's always nice to hear things are in play.
You know, Kamala Harris is going to Texas. I think she's coming to Austin and having Beyonce perform at her big rally. You know, there's no reason for Kamala Harris to waste time, money, and resources coming to Texas unless they think Texas is in play somehow. But you and I both know, and you know better than me because you're from Texas. Texas should not be a state that's in play for the Democrats. It should not be even close, in the election for the Democrats because Texas is a red state, but it's been turning blue, slowly and steadily because of all the non-citizens that can vote. And Ken Paxton, they took away Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, ability to prosecute voter fraud.
Didn't we already
do
this one?
Imagine that. When you have he's great, Attorney General Ken Paxton in Texas, he can't prosecute voter fraud in the state of Texas. And then you've got just, I don't know. I'm concerned about Texas. It's, I think, 40 or 41 Electoral College votes. That totally wipes out the swing states. Georgia won't matter. Pennsylvania won't matter. North Carolina. None of these states will matter if they are somehow able to take Texas.
Exactly. While we're watching Georgia and Pennsylvania and Arizona and Michigan, they swoop in and steal Texas, which the Democrats have been bragging they plan on doing. And we know Texas, other than California, has the most illegals.
So how do you brag about planning to win an election? Isn't that called campaigning? Anyway,
yeah.
Let's imagine a scenario where Harrison Walz only went to states that were conceivably up for grabs. Specifically a scenario where she says, I can't win Texas, so I'm not even going to waste my time, resources, or energy going there to campaign. It's pretty easy to imagine that in that scenario, folks like Marjorie Taylor Greene would use that refusal to go to Texas as evidence of how much Harris hates the red states. She doesn't care about flyover country, and she won't even show up there if she can't get something out of it like electoral votes. We're currently living in a situation where Harris is doing what people like MTG pretend to want politicians to do, which is to not ignore parts of the country that they're unlikely to win. They brag about Trump doing this all the time, like he's not going to win New York, but they love to talk about how he's doing a rally there anyway. Because Harris is doing something that they should be praising, which is campaigning in Texas, the narrative has to switch a little bit. She's not going to Texas because she's campaigning to be the president of all the states. She's going there because there's a secret plan to steal Texas while everyone's off looking at the battleground states. This is a good illustration of how folks in Alex-adjacent media and apparently government will criticize you for doing something or for not doing it. Their complaint has no connection to reality, and they're just making these complaints because they're politically useful.
Mm-hmm.
It's meaningless.
Yeah. Yep. To make any decision based upon anything they think would be a fucking idiot's move.
It would be a little bit silly.
Yep.
So Marjorie Taylor Greene, is like, she was on, and you even responded to this, like, we did the Paxton thing last time.
Yeah. We can't do this again.
Right. And we're relitigating that appearance a bit.
What?
All you did last Friday was report what a constituent was saying to you, and they had all these headlines about, will MTG and Alex Jones get sued for saying this company's engaged in this? They make a claim that we made a claim that we didn't make. They make the claim and then blame us for the claim they're making.
Yeah, I didn't blame a voting machine company. I said what was happening. I said, I'm a representative of the people. My job is, title literally is representative. So I am representing the people in my district. I said what my people were saying. I just was saying, here's what people are saying, and here's how you overcome it.
This is garbage. Like, on Alex's show, Marjorie Taylor Greene said that Dominion voting machines were switching votes from Republican to Democrat, and the basis for that claim was that a friend of hers saw it alleged in a social media post. If this is all it takes for a sitting member of Congress to defend themselves for making irresponsible and bullshit claims, then there's nothing that anyone can't get away with. I repeated some bullshit my friend said they saw online is now I'm speaking up for the people that I represent.
Yep.
It's almost as if Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't feel like she has any responsibility herself, but is merely a conduit by which social media bullshit gets amplified. And I think there's some truth to that being part of her mentality, which is terrifying. And, I don't know. Not good.
It's all social media at this point. All of it is just who's tweeting about fucking what. I don't even know.
But that's talking up for the people.
Ugh.
If she wants to hold that standard, she needs to be saying a lot of really way worse stuff, probably. So there's a lot of people tweeting some really terrible stuff in her district, I'm sure.
I mean, I bet she could do it.
Mm?
I think really now my feel on these people would be just like fucking... let's go.
Mm.
You know, you can get away with anything. So let's find out what anything means.
Mm.
Like, I would be acting fucking crazy because she thinks this is crazy. And this isn't that crazy. There's crazier shit you could be doing.
I think she was in on the weather weapons stuff with the hurricanes.
Lazy.
It's light crazy.
Lazy is what it is. You got to go fucking hard these days.
Call in Eddie Bravo. He'll
Why
tell
not?
You some things. He'll give
Why
you some leads.
Why not? Yeah. Who's going to stop you?
So
she's like, oh, Ken Paxton's great. You can do whatever you want. So do whatever you want.
Well, there is still like a slight concern about getting sued. And that's why they're being a bit defensive.
That would be absurd.
Because they did name Dominion on air.
Yeah.
And that's what they were talking about.
Sure.
And so I think there is a slight sense of like, uh-oh.
Mm.
And MTG is a bit, I think she's trying to dance around a little.
Alex, when I get off, I'm going to send you a video compilation of Democrats attacking voting machines, talking about how votes can be stolen, votes can be flipped, and talking about all the problems with voting machines. And this is all the stuff they used to say before 2020. And you can play that on your show, break it up however you want, share it on your social media. But the reality is, it's not just me that's been saying that. It's not just you, and it's not a whole bunch of voters across the country. It's Democrats as well. And we should not be sued for simply calling this out. It's just like this, Alex. It's like me saying, you know, I don't like this brand of coffee. I personally would like to choose another brand of coffee. So for me, I'm going to say, I don't like voting on voting machines. I would like to vote on paper ballots. I shouldn't be sued for that. No one should be sued for that. You shouldn't be sued for that. The American people shouldn't be sued for that. Because, again, I'll go back to this. The American people own the elections.
No one cares about you having or voicing a coffee preference in the same way that no one cares if you have or voice a preference about voting methods. You're free to have whatever preferences about this shit that you want. These two examples are a little different, though, in that the coffee example is purely a matter of subjective preference, whereas the voting one kind of has implications. I like coffee X over coffee Y doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything wrong with coffee Y. But in the case of voting, this preference always seems to contain the implication that you prefer your voting method because the alternative is easier to cheat. But that's still, like, if you're a private person just living their lives, it probably doesn't matter that much, even if there is that slight implication in there. Voting with machines like those made by Dominion has not been shown that they're super easy to cheat, but if you have preferences that aren't wholly based on truth, who cares? Everybody does. When you're a sitting member of Congress, you have a slightly higher responsibility to the public than to just engage with matters of public policy this casually. Then, when you say something that's probably defamatory based on what your friend said they saw on Twitter, it's kind of embarrassing to pretend that you think that all you did was state a preference, like how someone might prefer coffee X to coffee Y. In reality, what you did was closer to appearing on a broadcast that Alex claims is watched by tens of millions of people, and you claimed that coffee Y was poisoning people based on something that your friend said that they saw on social media. This is all just super irresponsible on her part, and when she tries to explain why what she did is totally cool, it only reveals that she's either incapable or unwilling to even understand what being responsible in her position would mean. Like, what it would look like to have a public responsibility is such, it's a foreign concept, to the way that she's approaching this.
Yeah, you know, I think what would be interesting about that, and what is probably the reason behind it, right, is because she makes a very disingenuous point that is very genuine, which is that she is a representative of people, mm-hmm. right? That's what she is. But the people themselves are never held responsible for her representation.
Mm.
She is supposed to be the representative of the people, and the people themselves don't seem to care what she's representing. So it's on them.
Well, and she's remarkably selective of what she's representing.
I mean,
it seems like she's representing what she, like, would have wanted anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, if the people that she's representing don't like that, then it's on them. It's their fault.
I would fucking love it if she was like, look, I know the vote wasn't stolen. I'm not a fucking idiot.
Sure.
But guess what? My voters think it was. So I begrudgingly must support this position.
I'm down.
I am the representative. I don't believe that these voting machines are swapping anything. I think
that's
bullshit.
Fair. That's fair.
That would be awesome.
That is fair. I mean, it does make sense to me, just on the sense of, like, okay, if that's what you guys want, but you have to be held accountable for that. And it seems like it has to go both ways. Like, she's never held accountable for her actions because the people that she's accountable to don't hold her accountable.
Yeah, there's some of that, and some of that probably is based on, you know, districts and, you know, party indexes and all that shit. Also, another thing that is the problem is, like, that the, like, this kind of an excuse and dodge is okay.
Sure.
Like, it's just fine. I'm just stating a preference, like coffee. What?
I mean, I...
It's conceptually unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he has Marjorie Taylor Greene on, and a lot of it is kind of this defensiveness over their other interview.
Sure.
But he said that...
Which is a news-making interview.
Totally.
Defensive about another interview.
I think it moved the needle.
Whoa, we gotta write headlines. MTG, mad that we wrote about her previous interview.
Right. So, but he had another guest he was going to have on.
Uh-huh.
And I was excited because he said, like, I'm going to have this big guest.
Yeah.
I've been planning it for a while.
Yeah.
You're never going to believe who he got. Do you want to guess?
I feel like I'd be pushing my luck if I said Kevin Sorbo again.
You would. And this was a trap. There's no way you could have guessed this.
Okay.
I mean, we are living in an incredibly dynamic, wonderful, horrible time. I mean, everything's going on, the good, the bad, and the ugly. All right, I had this guest set up weeks ago. He's really smart, know him a while. And I'm not trying to make it a Joe Rogan-centric program. He's also Joe Rogan's one of his most popular guests and also his medical advisor. He owns a big medical company. He himself's not a physician, but a bunch of them work for him.
Yeah. So you never want to be in a position where you're Alex Jones saying, I don't want this to become a Joe Rogan-centric program, as you introduce Rogan's medical advisor as your guest.
Yeah.
saying that out loud kind of makes it too clear that you know you're a Rogan-centric program and you're really self-conscious about it and how you're kind of ashamed that you don't have an identity for yourself.
That whole protests too much thing needs to be taught more in schools.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So this guest is a guy named Brigham Bueller, who runs a company called Revive RX, which is like a mail-order pill outlet.
Sure.
He started that and then another company called Ways to Well, the number two.
Okay.
Which exists in this part of the market that basically, it starts with a good premise, which is like big pharma has a lot of problems.
Sure.
And then it comes up with a bad solution, which is basically like, let's do it worse and make a cut.
Yeah.
COVID really opened up this market for people as they clamored to get prescriptions for hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. And then as many pharmacies started to have shortages, things like Ozempic and Adderall, these types of companies can really shine. And there's a place you make quite a bit of money in that.
Yeah, yeah. The thing about that is like the whole system's fucked about that, you know, because like if I'm a big pharma company and somebody is doing that in an effective way, aha, I've purchased you and now you can not succeed in your goal of fighting against us. But if somebody's scamming people, you go, keep on scamming people, because then when people are like, oh, they're scammers, they go right back to big pharma. It's a circle that keeps us all fucked in the face.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, I find it all shady.
It's all shady as shit.
I think doctors less so than mail order pill places.
Marginally.
Just historically. But it's close.
I was gonna say, historically is the wrong answer.
One of them
within the previous 30 years is more likely than the previous several hundred before that.
One of them has a deeper history of that you can pull from to judge. I'll give you that. So Revive RX recently had to do a recall because they sent vials of testosterone to patients who were ordering weight loss drugs.
Great.
According to the New York Post, this was a class one recall, quote, meaning that there is a reasonable probability that the use of or exposure to a violative product will cause serious adverse health consequences or death.
Great.
This has been not their only recall, and in June 2023, they got a letter from the FDA compliance director for pharmaceuticals alerting them of, quote, unsanitary conditions at their facility. But he's cool, and he's on Rogan, so Alex is desperate to associate himself with this guy however he can. It's sad. This is a Joe Rogan-centric program.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that, you know, it's like, it's a side effect, right? Because you don't get into the shady pill game if you're not already on the shadier side. And if you're on the shadier side, you're a cutting corners kind of cat. Mm-hmm. That's what you do, you know? But what would it be like if they were just like really rigorous? Like, hey, listen, we're a shady pill place, but you get what you ordered.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that what you ordered is functionally nothing.
But also what if they were like, you're going to have to really see a bunch of doctors before we sign off on this. We're gonna have to triplicate this
thing. See, that's where you get into the that's where you're done.
I don't know, shady and dotting your I's and T's and stuff. It just doesn't seem
to go together.
No. So we got Rogan's doctor guy coming on
here,
and so Alex gives him a nice little introduction.
And boy, we always ask guests to send us any clips or documents. He sent us a ton of amazing stuff here, and over the next 2 hours we're going to go over a lot of this and play these clips. It's perfect timing with Bill Gates getting indicted in the Netherlands for all the harm that he pushed with the poison shots that he's a big benefactor of, and him trying to be our medical doctor. I mean, there's a huge awakening.
So this is the sort of thing that Alex does pretty regularly, which is kind of testing the waters with a guest by making some kind of a claim that they should push back on.
Sure.
And if they don't, you know you got them.
Right.
They're playing ball if they're going along with this.
Right. The fascist, is that a cow?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The claim that Bill Gates was indicted in the Netherlands, it was going around like dumb shit social media circles, but it's not true. Alex's show is just him skimming Twitter and riffing about it as if he's some kind of a scholar, so that's what he's doing here. An indictment is what a state power does when they arrest you for a crime. So to say that Bill Gates had been indicted in the Netherlands is to say that the state charged him with a crime. In the real world, what happened is that 7 people in the Netherlands filed a civil suit against Gates and a group of other people who they claim misled them about COVID vaccines. Gates' lawyer wanted to have this case thrown out of court because he doesn't live in the Netherlands. So the court, they shouldn't have any jurisdiction to hear this case.
Sure.
That was the point, the argument he was trying to make.
Sure.
The court ruled that they do have jurisdiction because if you're a criminal conspirator who commits a crime against the people of the Netherlands, then the Dutch courts have the right to hear that case.
Sure.
It's Dutch people who are aggrieved, so it's Dutch courts who can hear the case. This is the decision that Alex is reporting as Gates being indicted, which isn't a mistake that you could accidentally make.
Sure.
It's either an act of intentional lying, or it's a sign that he didn't look into the story at all before reporting it. And there's another problem here, too, which is, I'm not sure if Alex should think that the Dutch court does have jurisdiction in this case. Given his insane ideas about sovereignty, I'm not sure who he thinks should hear this kind of case, given that Bill Gates is a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
But I know that it's really clear that he doesn't think that Brazil has the jurisdiction to hold Elon Musk responsible for
a
crime.
Right. He definitely doesn't think Chevron should be held accountable for any of their crimes.
No, so I don't understand why Bill Gates should be held responsible by a Dutch court, according to Alex.
I mean, even that, like, listen, we can do the race thing, sure. But if it was Elon Musk, he wouldn't care. He wouldn't be like, oh, the Dutch have a right to Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. This is purely political.
Mm-hmm.
So this is finally an issue free of race problem for us and Alex today.
It is maybe the one. But it's also one where it's like, I take issue with your telling of this fake story. But also, I think I take issue with your position, according to you, about the real story.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's wrong, like, in four different ways.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
He's got that tesseract ability about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the doctor guy just was like, yeah, cool. And so he failed the test of Alex just saying some dumb shit at
him.
But I think on some level, he has some...
You mean he passed the test?
For Alex,
yes. Yeah.
Failed it for me.
Failed it for the real world and the rest of us in, you know, decency.
And that being said, I think he has some fair points. I think some of the conclusions are bad, but he has some fine points.
I've talked to you a lot. I mean, well, whatever the subject, we're basically, I totally agree with you, but you say it in ways even better than I do. Plus, you've been a witness to it.
Yeah.
And it's really important to expose that.
Yeah. So one of the examples I can give is so often. So let's just get into why we believe in proactive predictive medicine. Everyone can agree that if we could prevent cancer, why would we want to focus on treatments for cancer, right? If we can prevent diabetes, we don't have to write drugs to treat diabetes. And these things are possible, but it requires getting proactive and predictive, and the system's not built to do that. On average, a patient gets 6 minutes with a provider in this country. That's for that doctor to be able to troubleshoot family history, go over all the ailments that are bothering you, all the prescription medications you're on, which now the average American's on four or more prescription drugs. It's virtually impossible to be able to cover that much ground in 6 minutes. I mean, it is impossible. Then if you look and you look through the layers of this,
I think this guy makes some decent points, but he's unfortunately talking to a guy who doesn't want to make anything better. For instance, cancer prevention is great. The number one way to prevent cancer is to not smoke. Alex smokes cigarettes in his studio, and it's hard to imagine him supporting anti-smoking initiatives that the government has taken in the past. And honestly, that pause where he thinks Alex is going to take over,
yep.
There's a chance that Alex is smoking a cigarette, and that's why he doesn't respond.
Very possible.
Or even more directly, Alex absolutely hates the HPV vaccine. He attacks it constantly, but it's effective at protecting you from HPV, which can cause cervical, anal, penile, vulva, or vaginal cancers. Getting the HPV vaccine is a part of responsible cancer prevention, but Alex doesn't support that and actually demonizes the shit out of it. Diabetes prevention is great, but the reality is that some people are going to get diabetes, and some people are gonna get cancer. Focusing on prevention is good, but if you're doing it to the exclusion of paying any attention to treatments, you're doing more harm than you think that you're doing. You're missing the point. Encouraging people to have a good diet, to exercise, to wear sunscreen, to check for lumps, these are all good things, but it's a little bit trite. This guy makes another fair point about doctors not having enough time with their patients, but again, what's the point? If Alex's political ideology is to be followed, then if you can't afford it, you shouldn't even get 6 minutes with a doctor. His agenda is not about providing better care and more universal access to services. Some of the stuff he's saying would make sense in another context, like this doctor, if he was talking to somebody else, but he's talking to Alex Jones, whose approach to healthcare is really just hyping up whatever supplement he accidentally ordered too much of this week, like sea moss.
Right. with the underlying subtext that any actual consequences are ordained by God, mm-hmm. and therefore prevention in its of itself is an act of sin.
Right. Yeah. And maybe it's a bioweapon. And
Yeah.
Maybe...
If you get sick, you deserve it is more of like Alex's fundamental philosophy.
You deserve it / the globalists did it.
Yeah, exactly. You deserve it. The globalists did it to you because you didn't fight back hard enough / didn't give me money.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not super interested in this guy. But he does seem, he has some complaints about, like food, like Fruit Loops.
Sure.
So here he gets into Fruit Loops.
Get him.
They don't know about Big Food, and I'm hoping we're bringing that to light.
Oh, talk about it, yeah.
Yeah, so in, one of the things we talked about in front of the Senate is in the United States in the 80s, there were 700 ingredients approved in our food by the FDA. There are now 10,000 ingredients approved to be in our food. A lot of those ingredients are banned in Europe and Canada. So Kellogg's makes one brand, one Fruit Loops, for instance. They make one cereal for the American people and in the same factory make a different concoction for other nations. So they have the ability to sell us less harmful, less addictive, less processed foods, but they choose not to. And they instead push these highly addictive, highly processed foods that have an array of different food dyes and chemicals in them that are banned in other countries.
And the same FDA runs around trying to stop people getting vitamins. So looking at that and where that's all going with Robert F. Kennedy exposing it, Rogan exposing it, you exposing it. I mean, this is really getting out there. Just going back in the back of the food for a moment. You mentioned Roundup and they knew what glyphosate did day one and grows cancers and hurts fertility and, you know, does all these things. But the U.S. is one of the only countries in the world that allows atrazine that 100% bends genders in all major species. And again, they know that they knew when they rolled it out that was going on, and then we see what's happening here. I mean, this is clearly a depopulation plan.
It definitely, the facts are there, and the data is overwhelming.
So this is a moment where Alex has asserted his dominance, and this guy just accepted it and signaled that he was along for the ride. He's not a doctor or a health advocate. He's a dude promoting his scammy shit that happens to be health adjacent, and that facade slips in 1 second. I want to play this moment, this specific moment for you again.
This is clearly a depopulation plan.
It definitely, the facts are there.
Yeah, this is a man pretending to hold on to whatever ability he has to take himself seriously, being confronted by Alex demanding he agree with something insane as a way to be a part of the in-group. Also, Fruit Loops were made available in the UK in 2012, and there was a bit of an issue about their ingredients, mostly dealing with the colors. The artificial colors weren't allowed in the UK, so they only had 3 colors, which were achieved by natural extracts. The UK doesn't ban these artificial food dyes, but the evil globalist EU requires that products containing yellow 6, yellow 5, or red 40 contain a warning that it could have, quote, an adverse effect on the children's activity and ability to concentrate. There wasn't a law that requires food to not have these ingredients, but it was a general cultural vibe. Market forces have shown that the European customer isn't that interested in their food being crazy colored and all that shit. So like having that warning label on a product is enough to reduce its sales, so a company like Kellogg's will make a compliant version of their cereal if they want to try and sell in that market. So I guess the answer is that the government needs to more closely regulate food color additives like they do in the EU. Is that the pitch that's being made on InfoWars? Because I don't think Alex supports that. I think he thinks the EU's evil.
I mean, the government should take a closer look at what people are putting inside their bodies cannot be a message that Alex supports in any fashion. Just full stop. Someone should look at what people are putting inside of them is a bad message for Alex.
It's tough to believe that you would be able to make it from A to B to C without him very seriously contradicting himself.
Yeah, somewhere along the line is an assault on Alex's bottom line. That's what's important.
So we start onto our journey
we
to Sunday.
Sunday. Right.
The 27th. And I think that Alex, this seems really illegal.
Elon Musk funded these ads, and these are some of the very best, most powerful, truthful ads out there. And they just dropped yesterday. The first place they dropped was at Real Alex Jones. The pack that Musk funded thought, hey, Alex, how would you like to put these out first. I thought that was a nice thing, though. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter to me. They've got more coming out this week.
So we know, I'm not sure about all the laws governing PAC activity, but Alex is saying that Elon Musk's PAC directly coordinated with him about these videos.
Yeah.
These Trump ads.
I mean, I listen, there are no laws regarding PACs. So let's all just pretend that any law that anybody's ever written about PACs or super PACs is just not real.
That's fair.
It's never going to be enforced on anybody, so who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the rally at Madison Square Garden is going on.
Yeah.
On was that Sunday? I think so.
Yes, the
know.
Nazi rally. Yeah.
So, but it wasn't Nazi.
No.
What are you saying?
No. I mean the Nazi reminiscent rally that was filled with Nazis who were openly Nazi about it.
Alex doesn't like talk like that.
Oh.
And then they say, oh, he's at Madison Square Garden where the Nazis were 84 years ago in 1939.
And now.
He wasn't even born yet.
He is
born
now
for 6 years. So he wasn't a twinkle in his father's eye or his mother's eye for 6 years.
Who were Nazis?
And now he's a Nazi for an arena that's had tens of thousands of events at it, from Elvis Presley to the Beatles. What the hell does that, from Kanye to George Strait?
Oops. If you're just pulling out names, Ye is a strange one.
Kanye to George Strait.
Ye, the guy who talked about how much he loves Nazis on your show.
Sure. That is, you know, sometimes Freud gets you.
Yes.
Sometimes Freud does get you. Sure, he was coke-addled and out of his mind, but sometimes he was right.
I just had to name four non-Nazi musical acts.
And I went
and
hard.
I whiffed.
Whoops.
So Alex talks a little bit about fighting the devil.
Sure.
And I think he sounds really stupid.
Oh yeah?
I've studied history. Satan operates the same. He has many antichrists. One final one.
Wait, what? No. Whoa.
I believe humanity.
What?
I feel it. I see it. Repulses this attack. But God leaves it up to us. God made us with free will and knows the outcome, but gives us free will. We will repulse this attack. There'll be a big awakening, and then the AI and the globalism and the decadence will be so powerful that within decades, this renaissance gets defeated, and then the big one comes in, and then that's a very short time the Antichrist is in control. That's how I see it, how I feel it, what my spirit tells me. But God's given us free will. We could repulse that next attack and push it off. See, it's all a game, isn't it? But for your soul, it's a third dimensional molecular simulation. Not a false simulation, not a digital thing in a computer. It's a total universe, planet, real people, whole nine yards, your ancestors, all of it in a real war game. So it's a real war, but at this level, to God, it's a war game. We're not going to get the big stuff to you, you know, at least past this level. By the way, I've been shown a little thing or two. And if you think we're going to be up in heaven floating around on clouds, that's you can see that. And if you want to punch out, you can always go to that. You make it past level one. That's level one. But nobody, almost nobody wants to punch out. And once you get past level one, then it gets even more intense what you face and the systems you're going to be dealing with. So it just gets cooler and more wild, ladies and gentlemen. And so it's really cool. God made it. It's beyond cool. All right, let me go ahead and shift gears back into what I was talking about here. Let's go ahead and play this Kamala is cruel ad.
Whoa.
Oh, my God.
Did you get a little bit of whiplash from...
what are we doing? What are any of us doing?
He's talking about the specifics of heaven, and then Kamala's me.
Yeah. I've been to heaven. In case you were wondering, I have seen the afterlife. You think you know something based on what everybody
else
told
you. See all those
you.
People hanging out with harps? That's the break room.
I have reached beyond the veil. I have pierced it, and I have seen through the glass clearly, as God himself said I could not. And now here's an ad that was made by Elon Musk. Oh, my God.
I think that, like, we take for granted how insane he is.
Yeah.
That's an insane person talking.
I mean, it's not that different. Honestly, that's really, honestly, that is most religious people on this planet.
Mm.
It is. It is.
I disagree.
Say what you want. At the end of the day, what you believe is that there's a big sky god, blankety blank, and then you go like, oh, and also it matters. Like, come on.
I disagree.
Get out of here.
I think that there is a big difference between saying, I have faith in something that brings a lot of shit to my life,
true,
gives me a sense of meaning, maybe a community. There's a difference between that and I've been to heaven and the harps are just like where people hang out in between missions. I think that there is a big difference. One is fully experiential.
Sure.
I have been to this heaven and shown mystical secrets of the universe.
Sure.
I think it's different than just someone who has a kind of decent relationship with...
Mm. I don't know. I'm just saying every God camp and church I've ever been to has had at least one person say something along the lines of, I've been to heaven, and everybody there goes, yes, you have, you're great. Now let's go to the store.
I'm not gonna sit here and defend God camps or anything like that.
There you go.
So, there's trouble in paradise.
Uh-huh.
And when I say paradise, I don't mean the angels in the break room.
Sure.
I mean Alex and Nick Fuentes.
Oh, God.
Nick is not super into Trump anymore.
Good.
And so Alex is having to deal with that.
Uh-oh.
Because Nick Fuentes is making videos about how Trump has sold out.
Nick Fuentes is a smart guy. I disagree with a lot of what he says, but he has a right to free speech, and I agree with a lot of what he says. We should hear from everybody. He's saying Trump is sold out, and that this isn't like 2016, that you know, people are refusing to endorse Kamala, the newspapers, and big millionaires are calling up to capitulate to Trump because Trump is sold out. No. They see the writing on the wall and globalism being in so much trouble, and so they're trying to now survive. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be a big fight with who Trump puts in, and the swamp isn't going to strike back in a lot of ways. It doesn't mean the war's won. But this is what victory looks like, is when Elon Musk sounds just like Alex Jones, and Tucker Carlson sounds just like Alex Jones, and Joe Rogan sounds just like Alex Jones.
So apparently Alex hasn't been paying much attention because Nick hasn't been supporting Trump for a while. Back in July, he said, quote, I don't even really care. I'm not energetic. I'm not enthusiastic. I'm not leaving my house to vote. Vote for what? For J.D. Vance and Usha? I'm not voting for this. I'm not lending my credibility to this. You see, he doesn't like that J.D. Vance for a number of reasons. But one of them is that this is something he brings to the forefront quite a bit.
Sure.
He's married to a non-white woman.
Uh-oh.
And has non-white children.
Uh-oh.
Previously, Nick has said, quote, who is this guy really? Do we expect that the guy who has an Indian wife and named their kid Vivek is going to support white identity? So that's a big problem for Nick. Then in August, he declared a Groiper war against Trump because he was afraid that the campaign was heading in the wrong direction. Previously, they'd done this against Charlie Kirk and created some real problems for him at live events, gaining a lot of traction in the process. This second war did not go great, and no one really cared what Nick was up to.
Right.
And then in September, Nick turned on Trump again after Trump made a public admission that he lost the 2020 election. Trump later called that a moment of sarcasm, but Nick was pretty understandably pissed off that Trump was breaking the kayfabe that their whole movement is based on. And now, I guess Nick has turned on Trump again.
Sure.
Nick really hates Israel, so Trump's overwhelming support of the country and Netanyahu were always going to be an issue. Beyond that, he's probably just becoming aware that his slot in the Trump world vision of power is pretty similar to what they offer Alex. We'll pat you on the head because we like how extreme your messaging gets, and you give us some cover, but you'll always be at the little kids' table when the adults are talking. That's an okay arrangement for someone like Alex, but Nick has his sights a little higher than that, and I suspect he can tell that he has much more to gain by being outside of this thing than inside.
Yeah.
Because then you can attack from the outside.
Hey, somebody with a long-term plan. How about that?
I mean, I think some of his short-term plans are bad, too.
Yeah.
Certainly that Groiper War didn't work out how he wanted it to.
Nope.
But you know, there's not a master plan. It's just, I think he can see the writing on the wall of, like,
let's not think about the next 2 days,
mm-hmm.
and instead let me think about how I'm fucking 12 years old or whatever, and I've got a long time to go.
Yeah.
So I should plan
in a couple of years, it's going to be really a problem for me to try and unwrite like sycophantic support of Elon Musk.
Yeah.
That's going to be really tough in the future, so let's just not like tie this waiter on my neck.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're not, if you're him and you're looking at the people around you and you're not going like, well, in a couple of years, either they've won and I'm useless, mm-hmm. or this whole thing falls apart and I have my chance.
Yeah.
Those are your only two real options if you're him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they win and I'm useless, like, there's still a possibility for them to win and me be more extreme than them.
Yeah.
And have some sort of purchase.
Yep.
But yeah.
Going along is not the way to do it.
No.
No.
So, hey, remember, earlier? Alex, talked to Rogan's doctor friend.
I do remember.
This is not a Rogan-centric.
Oh no, do we have another Roganer?
No! This is not a Rogan-centric
podcast. I feel like maybe he's been protesting too much.
No.
In fact, I got an Eddie Bravo clip from dinner last night. Oh, he was here for Joe's show. Went out to dinner. Called me. And at the end of dinner, I said, you gotta say this on camera. And he's like, no. And he was saying something everybody already knows, but he was talking about Joe behind the scenes. And now, Joe knew all this stuff decades ago, as I've told you, but was trying to, like, play it safe. And when they came after him publicly and behind the scenes the last few years, he's, like, fire-breathing now behind the scenes, totally awake, totally pissed, and doing it his way, unpacking him on air. Oh, I'm nonpartisan, while he just devastates them.
Who cares? Like, Alex has, he's trying to play a video of something he coaxed Eddie Bravo into saying after dinner the night before about gossip about Rogan and how he means what he says.
Wow.
And how he's cool.
Wow.
This is sad.
That is crazy.
This guy's been to heaven.
Why are you doing this? Have a meeting before the show about what's going to be in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Just do that.
Well, you can't, because then you lose moments like this.
Oh my God.
So before the hour ends, here, guys, send Chase in here. I'll find the video here for him. Have him grab this off my phone.
What is happening?
And find it here. Have him grab this. It's the video last night with Eddie Bravo. There's only one. It's it was after he was on Rogan, went to dinner.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm not going to just get off the phone. It'll be higher res. I'm trying to find. You know, I'll just give it to you during the break. I'm going to find it here.
This is a show!
I didn't shoot video of that.
You are on the air!
Oh, that's in the studio. Did I not shoot video of that?
What is happening?
I'm losing my mind.
Yes!
Oh, yeah, here it is. All right, anyways, I'll give it to you. It's just a fun video. So
it's just fun. So look, this is why you don't prepare before the show, because that's electric.
I was thinking this whenever he was like, you know, there's more than one Antichrist. This is, you know, and I was like, I wish that I was in the Old West, because I genuinely do want to throw Alex out of a saloon.
Mm.
I would like to throw him out the window of a saloon in the classical style.
Not the swinging doors?
No. The classical, like, throw him and have him on the bar and slide him the whole way. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like a team of people all the way across, and then he goes flying headfirst out the window, and then we throw his hat after him.
You gotta throw
That's
the hat.
What I'm looking for. That's what I want, and that just made me feel like I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But unfortunately, time travel has not yet been invented.
You know that if you're like running him along the bar,
yep,
he's gonna be drinking everything along the way.
I mean, there's gotta be some comedy. There's gotta be some comedy too.
Yeah.
I mean, what am I?
So, Alex, I guess Chase is gonna get that video.
Great.
And so he starts talking more about, Nick Fuentes, being against Trump.
Great.
And in doing so, he has to counter a point that Nick is making, and I think he does it in the funniest possible way.
He's got to put hardcore American patriots in the Justice Department immediately. And so those are the big things
Nazi
we're
rally.
Looking for. We're not putting the cart before the horse starting to cover this. This is important now. And Nick's right to be raising it. I disagree with his postulation that the sellout's already happened. And, you know, things like that. And like, oh, well, J.D. Vance is backed by Peter Thiel. And, well, you know, there's a bunch of, yeah, who was, was for Trump the first time. And was not with the main deep state. I mean, you can say, you know, Thiel's involved in the surveillance grid, selling equipment, and you can say he's in all this, but he's certainly not part of the main group.
What?
Trump's never made I'm glad.
That's your defense?
I think he's a great choice.
He's just,
what?
He's not one of the main globalists.
What?
He's on the side.
Unacceptable! Unfucking acceptable!
I think Alex is just like, well, at this point, I can't even really make the argument that I want to make. I think it would sound silly. My audience isn't even going to buy that.
Nobody
that
cares.
That Peter Thiel is not connected to folks. And
yeah.
Even I've yelled about him in the past.
Totally.
He's not one of the big guys. He's not Schwab.
What does that mean?
Who cares?
He's not one of the main group.
He's not.
Jesus. What do they do? Do they do brunch? How do you know if you're in the main group? How do you know if you were invited into the main group? Mm-hmm. Is there a group chat? How do you know if you've been kicked out of the main group? Do they not tell you and invite you to things anymore? What is the main group?
It depends on what sort of demon you have. If you have a tall demon inside you, you're part of the main group.
You're right.
If you have a short demon inside you.
It's drawing straws. That's what it is. That's the way it is. It's the main group. I get it. I am the idiot here.
So, Alex is a bit defensive about, Nick.
Sure.
And I think understandably so.
And so, everybody knows Trump's not anti-Israel. Okay. And then, is that a secret? Never been. It's not like some new policy. And then Trump's gotten roughly 10% of his donations from big billionaires. The Democrats have gotten 90%+ of their money, look it up, from the rich. There's never in a presidential election, not even in 2016, been all the big money on the Democrats the way it is now. I mean, they always have gotten the big money. They used to get like 60%, 65% in an election with George Herbert Walker Bush or George W. or that crap. Now, over 90% is going to the Democrats, and so you can't point at Trump and say he's an elitist.
This is Elon Musk erasure.
I mean, isn't there a guy who's just going out giving $1 million away all the time?
Well, that's to defend the First and Second Amendment. That is literally and legally not about voting at all.
Fine, whatever.
He's just thrilled about the First and Second Amendment.
The point is, he can throw around $1 million.
Right.
The thing that TV budgets apparently can't afford for, like, the winner of the challenge. Despite the fact that it's been on for, like, 40, 50 years or
something. You know how many seasons it's been on?
40 seasons.
Exactly.
You're goddamn right.
And I have some thoughts about the last episode that you haven't seen yet.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
I have to keep them to myself.
Ooh.
So one of the big points that Nick Fuentes makes in the clip that Alex played earlier on his show is that Trump is accepting a ton of money from big donors, and it's clearly going to affect his policymaking. He says something to the effect of, this isn't how it was in 2016, or at least it didn't feel like it, which made me feel very, very sad.
Yeah.
Because pretty sure he was still in high school in 2016.
Yeah.
The Washington Post just did a breakdown of the top 50 mega donors of the 2024 cycle and found that of the $2.5 billion that they represent in donations, $1.6 billion went to Republican-leaning candidates and groups. All of the top seven individuals, everyone who has donated more than $50 million gave to predominantly Republicans. It would be silly to say that all big money donors are behind Trump, and I'm not making that claim at all, but the point is that it's a complete fraud for Alex to be pretending that all the big money donors are behind Harris. He's saying this because he knows that the alternative is very unpalatable to the audience, and that the alternative is reality.
Yeah.
Reality is unpalatable.
Mm. Ain't that the truth?
Ain't it the truth?
Mm.
So you've had a lot of thoughts about this rally that Trump had.
The Nazi rally?
Bah. So we get to Monday, and Alex is now able to reflect on this rally.
Nazi rally.
Well.
Okay.
Look.
No. I get you.
Look.
Yes.
Sandra Bullock wasn't there.
That's a good point.
Right?
So can it really be a Nazi
Come
rally?
On. So, Alex is just real defensive about this to the point where he's defending Trump's dad.
Great.
As of Friday, it was 5,500 TV newscasts nationally and newspaper articles saying Trump is Hitler going to Madison Square Garden because the Nazis were there 85 years ago. That completely blew up in their face as a giant joke everywhere. They're now saying, well, Trump's dad was part German, so he's bad. I mean, this is... That's CNN, by the way. Well, I'm half German. I guess I'm bad, too. These people are desperate.
So I don't think anyone's saying that Trump's dad's a Nazi because he's part German. There's some concerns about him being a noted fan of eugenics, having a history of racist rental practices in the buildings he owned, and being one of seven people arrested at a 1927 Klan rally that turned into a brawl in New York. It just feels like Alex isn't taking any of this stuff seriously. His career was created in opposition to those people on TV who would just spin whatever story comes across their desk that day. And perhaps the ultimate indictment of him and his career is that he's just turned into a more embarrassing version of the same thing. And I think that's kind of fitting.
Yeah.
It's a kind of hell that he now has to live in.
Yeah. Yeah, he is trapped there and he made it himself. So it's got the good Twilight Zone feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not bad enough.
And
you know?
He can look at someone like Nick Fuentes, who's young and kind of free.
Yeah.
And able to make those kinds of moves. And I think he's kind of mad that he can't.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a small comfort, but I do think he probably is miserable.
Yeah, I think the transition from trying to get something to trying to protect something is too much for most people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is why you see so many people go from like, oh, I can take risk, to being like, nope, nothing, no, won't change, won't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just a hard transition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, when you make jokes, you make transitions between those jokes.
Nice. And that was a transition between the thing I said and what you're about to say.
Exactly, which is about a guy who's telling jokes.
Oh, shit.
At the rally.
Now we're doing it.
It's not a Nazi rally.
It's a Nazi rally.
So Tony Hinchcliffe was a...
That's right!
I'm sure you heard a little bit about this.
Yeah, I did.
Some people had some problems with some of the jokes that he was telling.
Uh-huh.
And so Alex is like, it's fine, no one's mad about this.
I mean, it's just... ridiculous, absolute, pure devastation of the system. And then a Tony Hinchcliffe, good friend of mine, joke, if anything about his humor, he attacks white people, Hispanics, blacks, Jews, everybody, you know, good old-fashioned Richard Pryor type stuff, made a joke about Puerto Rico being a floating island of garbage. Actually, a very pretty island, but there is a lot of garbage. That he hates Hispanics. Nobody's buying that crap. So it's just crazy. Tucker had the best speech last night.
Smash cut to Trump's team trying to distance themselves from Tony Hinchcliffe desperately.
Amazing.
No one really cared.
Ugh.
So I assume that you heard a little bit about this.
Yeah.
But I also assumed you didn't watch his set.
Of course not.
And so that was so exciting for me. Because
oh, God, no, you son of a...
Let's listen to a little bit of Tony Hinchcliffe.
Why? No, I was so excited to get away with it.
See, before we started recording, I told you I was excited about something.
I was going to get away with not hearing any of it.
Nope.
And you tricked me.
You're going to have to listen to more than a lot of people, I think.
Oh, man.
And in Texas, stuff is really, really crazy. We're right there by a wide open border. Where are my proud Latinos at tonight? You guys see what I mean? It's wide open. There's so many of them. It's absolutely incredible. Believe it or not, people, I welcome migrants to the United States of America with open arms. And by open arms, I mean like this.
Just to give a little visual context, he's waving people off.
Right,
he's
I got gotcha.
Go away, go away.
Away. Yeah.
Those are the open arms.
I gotcha. Killing it.
It's wild. And these Latinos, they love making babies, too. Just know that. They do. They do. There's no pulling out. They don't do that. They come inside, just like they did to our country. Republicans are the party with a good sense of humor. Free speech is under attack, people. I host a show, and each week I get updates what words we're allowed to use and not use anymore. It's happening right now the past few years. It's a real thing. And, you know, used to be able to tell people to Google stuff. My mom's a boomer in the state of Ohio, and there's no convincing her of anything. She's eating the cats. She's eating the dogs. They're eating the pets up there. It is absolutely wild times. It really, really is. And, you know, there's a lot going on. Like, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah. I think it's called Puerto Rico. Okay. All right. Okay. We're getting there. Now, again, normally I don't follow the national anthem, everybody. This isn't exactly a perfect comedy setup.
You were laughing quite a bit. People, I muted his mic. Jordan was laughing so much.
It was fucking great. It was top tier Tony Hinchcliffe material.
So good.
That's the Kill Tony that I recall from my good friend Ian Ellis being on the show.
So I was really excited when this all happened because I knew that it meant that we got to talk about it and that you were going to be pretty mad and I was going to be able to make you mad.
Yep. Yep.
And I was going to be mad. Because first of all, I think Tony Hinchcliffe sucks.
Yep.
I'm old school on that position. I don't need him bombing at a Trump rally to convince me that he's the worst.
No, in pure comedy terms, we hated him long before you ever heard his fucking name.
Yeah. I think he's not funny, that roast comedy is a form of humor that's cringe-inducingly bad, except in very rare cases, and that if it weren't for Joe Rogan, no one would have any idea who Tony is. Further, I think his show Kill Tony is an exercise in exploitation that's structured around bullying that offers people gatekeeping and humiliation disguised as opportunity. I think the whole thing is shit, the show has hurt way more people than it's helped, and I've watched a fair amount of it, and I can't tell you a specific instance of something that made me laugh. All that being said, as a performer, as a former stand-up, I felt for Tony at Madison Square Garden. That man was struggling.
Yeah, that was not good.
All of us who have done stand-up, we know what a bomb feels like, but very few people in the world know what it's like to bomb in front of that audience in Madison Square Garden during a political rally for a former president who seems very much like he wants to be a dictator. Whatever panic you're feeling when you get off stage at the Laugh Factory or Cigars and Stripes, that's got nothing on what must have been going through his head.
Oh, man.
It's got to be like, could they kill me for this?
I mean, you know, like, everybody, I read a lot of people's thoughts on it, and I was like, whatever. This should never have gotten out into your world. Mm-hmm. This was not meant for the real world.
Nah.
All of their takes are bad, but that's not their fault. It's because it's not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
It should just never have been there.
Your takes are supposed to be implied.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever you guys have to say is whatever. But like, Tony should never have taken the gig.
No.
It's a terrible gig, and also you're not a comedian if you perform for a politician.
Yeah.
You're a shitty person.
And after it all went bad, Rogan actually even came out and said, I told him not to do that.
Yeah! Don't do it! Are you crazy?
Yeah. See, a lot of people have a lot of complaints, but I want to look at this big picture.
Yeah.
The jokes are not good and kind of hacky.
Yeah.
You can be edgy and fuck around with race taboos if you want, but it kind of sucks when you do it for no reason. The whole structure of the garbage island thing is kind of like a playground level insult, and I'm not certain what type of pride you get as a comic out of making that joke. That's like, they found the Loch Ness Monster at your house and it's your mom.
Yeah, I mean, that
kind of a twist reveal.
It is a 90s,
man.
Like, I'm going there. Not.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
I guess if the whole practice of comedy is about accruing negative attention you can turn into fame while cloistering yourself in a bubble maintained by Joe Rogan's celebrity where you get to do a show where you insult open micers, if that's all comedy is, then I guess maybe this is exactly what you would want to do. But I don't know what it does in terms of any kind of art form.
Mm.
Anyway, this joke in particular has backfired spectacularly. It seems like the Trump campaign forgot that there is a large Puerto Rican population in some important states and that there are a number of really famous people who are proud of their roots, like Bad Bunny,
sure.
who has a large audience that does not appreciate this kind of tone.
Mm.
I suspect that the Trump folks thought that they could ride things out by being like, the left is too uptight, they can't take a joke. But instead, they were distancing themselves from Tony pretty quick and releasing statements throwing him under the bus. Trump was asked in an interview and he said, quote, I don't know him. Someone put him up there. I don't know who he is.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Ultimately, this is so funny because this joke could impact Trump in the polls, or at least has the potential to, so his team is scrambling to distance themselves. But I thought Tony said in that clip that Republicans were the ones with a good sense of humor.
Yep.
The audience seemed to love responding to him saying that they had a great sense of humor, and now it seems like they can't stand by the joke.
I mean, hey, listen, I get everybody's points of view, but if you are a person who was going to vote one way and then heard that and have decided, no, I will vote the other way, then you are a bad person. Mm. You are personally not a good person.
I don't know.
Because that is fucking pathetic.
Well,
the man was the president before.
Right.
Are you telling me that all of the rape? Now he talks shit about Puerto Rico? Oh, fuck no! I'm voting Harris! Fuck all of these people.
Maybe, but I think that a lot of people have different awareness bases. And,
that's fine.
Yeah, I don't know if that they makes them bad
whatever,
people.
They can have whatever they like.
Yeah.
But if you do that, then that's on you. And you can live your life however you like.
Yeah.
Just know that that's your choice, is that you are fine with all of the other stuff, but not the joke about Puerto Rico.
I think that some people probably don't know, like, some of the realities about what Trump has done.
Okay.
And so they're not saying that I'll put up with that, but this joke is no good.
Sure.
So I wanted to talk about this a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that the Puerto Rico joke got most of the attention.
Sure.
But I think that even in that segment that I just played for you, there's something else that embodies how much he's floundering on
sure.
the stage.
Sure.
And I really want to enjoy that for a
okay,
bit.
Okay, okay.
Because I really don't like Tony Hinchcliffe.
Yeah.
Free speech is under attack, people. I host a show, and each week I get updates what words we're allowed to use and not use anymore. It's happening right now the past few years. It's a real thing. And, you know, used to be able to tell people to Google stuff. My mom's a boomer in the state of Ohio, and there's no convincing her of anything. She's eating the cats. She's eating the dogs. They're eating the pets up there. It is absolutely wild times. It really, really is. And,
so the opening premise here is that free speech is under attack. And the payoff of that is supposed to be that he gets a new list of words that he can't use every week. But he's not delivering that like a punchline. That feels like just more setup. Like the real punchline was supposed to be something like, this week I can't, found out that I'm not allowed to say restricted or vocabulary anymore.
Right.
But there's no joke, and there's no laugh for the idea that he gets a list of words he can't say on his self-produced podcast where he insults open mic comics. This isn't treated like a joke because the audience sincerely believes that people like him do get these lists of words that they can't say, so it just sounds like someone saying a thing to them that is true. I think it's supposed to be a heightening of the premise that free speech is under attack, but he got so little reaction that he bailed on what it was almost certainly supposed to come after that, namely, you know, saying stuff that he's not allowed to say. You don't introduce this idea of a list of things you can't say without saying them. Can you imagine George Carlin getting there up there on TV, be like, there's seven things you can't say on TV?
Now I won't say them.
Now let's move along.
We'll never know, and you will never know what they are, right. Unless you come to my live show.
It's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
So instead of getting into the words that he's been told you can't say, Tony changes thoughts entirely and talks about how you can't Google things anymore. Unfortunately, people like the only reason he's relevant, Joe Rogan, are essential pieces of the media system that's elevated shitty information to the point where it's gotten as hard as it is to assess things online. It's unfortunate because this is a situation where a comedian could tell truth to power and make a joke about how people like Rogan have a responsibility to handle information better so bullshit isn't so easily cultivated. He doesn't want to piss off Rogan, though, so this joke kind of falls apart at the seams. It's now about how his mom is a boomer and can't Google things anymore, presumably because of the list of words he's not allowed to say because free speech is under attack. The connective tissue here is tough. This naturally raises a question, which is, was his mom ever good at Googling? Him calling her a boomer is supposed to make me think that she's not good with technology, so maybe this isn't an issue with Google or free speech. Maybe it's just him complaining about his mom. So Tony's mom can't Google things, and the punchline of this is that she's in Ohio and she's eating her pets. How did this happen as a result of bad Googling?
That was my question.
I know that he's just trying to get a pop from the crowd by reminding them of the racist panic they used to attack Haitians, but what's the actual thought behind putting this on paper? Is the idea supposed to be that Tony's mom Googled the story about the Haitian immigrants, but somehow came away with the impression that what she should be doing is eating her pets?
Right.
Is the joke that his mom wanted to eat the pets before anyone else could? Like, what is going on here?
Right.
How does any of this relate to the premise of the list of words he can't say and how free speech is under attack? These are all disconnected thoughts being poorly and lazily delivered by a dude who knows full well that he is eating shit on that stage.
Yeah.
It makes me furious.
It is, I will say that one thing got me too. I read a article that was like, that had in the second paragraph, superstar comedian Tony Hinchcliffe, and I was like, done. You're gone.
Well,
you're gone. Get out of here.
I don't want to defend that phrasing.
No.
But like, we do.
I'm sure he's very popular. And he's far
Kill
more
Tony
popular.
Is huge.
I'm sure it's bigger than we'll ever be by a factor of 10 million.
Yes.
Don't care. Do not care. He is a shitty comedian.
I'm talking about his bits from a structural and as a joke perspective.
Right.
Because I know that if I criticized, like, oh, hey, the joke that Puerto Rico is a garbage island.
Whatever.
Hey, I'm being too sensitive. I'm being uptight.
Eh.
And I think it's really more interesting how poorly constructed these jokes are and how they make no sense.
Yeah.
Like, he has this whole thing about, like, oh, I could say all this crazy shit because I'm a comic and comedy is important and boo, 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 boo. All these fucking idiots. And this jokes, these jokes are bad.
Yep.
Structurally bad. You can't hide behind this comedy shield.
No.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I will openly admit to laughing at far worse,
way worse
racism-based humor because the construction of the bit was too good to deny.
Mm-hmm.
That is how it works in this horrible world that we were congealed out of.
Mm-hmm.
That was bad comedy.
So he does get them back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He makes a celebrity joke.
Okay,
he
gets always a good move.
He gets them back, and then he steers right back into the rocks.
The other side's got a lot of crazy endorsements. Swift, Eminem, Leo DiCaprio, Beyonce. Every day the Democratic Party looks more and more like a P. Diddy party. Oh.
And they're just a bad audience. They're just a bad audience.
Okay, that's what you guys want. All right. Heck yeah. It's a cool black guy with a thing on his head. What the hell is that? A lampshade? Look at this guy. Oh my goodness. Wow. I'm just kidding. That's one of my buddies. He had a Halloween party last night. We had fun. We carved watermelons together. It was awesome. You guys are, this is a groany little morning crowd, huh? It's tough to follow this, audition for the next Commissioner Gordon's over here.
So he makes an interesting point, because Elon Musk is another speaker at this rally, and Diddy pretty famously helped Musk buy Twitter. Seems like an elephant in the room that maybe a truth teller type of comedian might point out, but not the hinge. But, so as soon as he gets things back into a place where he feels like he's a performer again with this Diddy joke, Tony can't resist the urge to have a, oh, that's what you want kind of condescending moment towards the audience. And you're saying they're a bad audience, and I'm not disagreeing with you.
No, yeah.
But you know that going in if you're a comic, and you just don't do this.
Yeah, they're not there for comedy.
Yeah.
They're not primed for comedy.
You're gonna fail as just,
totally.
There's no way.
And if you've heard political speeches, the rhythm of the speech is what they're primed for. So they're primed for blankety blankety blank, boo, blankety 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 blank, yay! They're not primed for complex two-step jokes.
You can exploit that as a performer who has like cut their teeth in stand-up.
Totally.
And you can do, you can fall into those rhythms and say things that are funny.
You can get the clapter,
but you
can do the
really
thing.
Do, what amounts to nightclub stand-up.
Nope.
Nope. And to try.
Absurd.
It makes you kind of a bad comedian in and of itself.
I mean, imagine, okay. Like, I would never do Madison Square Garden for a whole host of reasons, but impossibility is right up there at the top,
mm-hmm.
right? But if I was going to do Madison Square Garden, I am going to Chris Rock the shit out. Like, you have to fill the Madison Square Garden with you.
Hmm.
And this is a man wilting under the pressure of people not wanting to follow along with bad jokes.
Yeah. And I really resent that moment of the like, oh, now you're getting where you
want. Fuck you.
Like, yes, it's a bad audience, but this is also your fault.
This is all your fault.
Yeah. So he gets that Diddy joke, and he starts to feel the energy.
Sure.
And so he goes and does some crowd work, which consists of him saying that a black guy carves watermelons for Halloween.
Right.
And that there's some people who look like Commissioner Gordon.
Yep.
I don't know it's not good.
No.
So I was thinking about this, and it's not as inflammatory as Michael Richards' racist meltdown.
Sure.
But it's kind of giving off the same energy.
Okay.
He's having a bad set, he feels the need to puff himself up, and so he does so by resorting to really basic and meaningless racist shit. This black guy carves watermelons.
Yeah.
Like, he is doing that as like almost a like involuntary response.
I mean, yeah, especially considering I feel like within comedy, we've moved on from that stereotype.
You'd think. Yeah.
It was run into the ground 10 years ago.
Not in roast culture.
I mean, in fucking Saved by the Bell, it was run into the ground.
So basically my point is that there's been a lot of talk about how the Puerto Rico joke was a disaster and might cost Trump votes he needs, but not enough time has been spent on how bad this is from a comedy perspective. Yeah. So let's listen to some more.
Oh man, you know what I was thinking? I was thinking just like, what type of comic would do this? And it is just, his job is to punch down. Of course he's a bootlicker who wants to punch down in the largest arena possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is pathetic shit. This is just pathetic. Like, anybody with funny is punching up.
But it's pathetic in that way with, like I was saying, with the shield of comedy.
Yeah. You're
wielding this shield of like, you can't take a joke, blah, blah, blah. And I think that you can earn using that shield a little bit when there's craft and when you're actually doing something interesting.
Sure.
But when you're like, this black guy carves watermelons, Puerto Rico's a garbage
get
island.
Get him out of here. Get him out of here.
You don't deserve that shield. Nope. I'm not going to give you the consideration of you're a thoughtful, all opportunity offender person.
Yeah.
You're just a troll kid on a playground.
Do you know what you do? What you do if you're a comic who's a real comic offered this gig is you take the gig and then you bobcat it. You light the fucking podium on fire and you get the hell out of there.
Well, I saw that Hulk Hogan was on it again.
Oh,
he was on
God.
This rally and he had a really tough time tearing off his shirt. And
now that's a visual metaphor.
I thought that this would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Like you're saying the bobcat, like burning it down.
Yeah.
I would have loved it if Hulk Hogan shows up. He comes out to, I am a real American.
Sure.
He's got the red and yellow boa.
Yeah.
He's got everything. He's Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
He's doing the thing.
Right? Or he's not Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
Right.
That's where he gets to.
Listen. Yeah.
So he tears off his red shirt.
Uh-huh.
And underneath, there's a Harris shirt. Like him turning to the NWO.
Right. And then he puts the sunglasses on.
He turns into Hollywood. Hollywood Harris Hogan.
Yeah.
People start throwing trash. It's like the Bash at the Beach or whatever.
That would be great.
When he turned heel. It would have been amazing. He could have recreated that moment.
Yep.
Fuck, that would have been great.
Yeah, it is crazy. Like that Nazi rally would have been a great canvas for some awesome art.
Yeah.
And instead we were treated to this shit.
Yeah, if Hulk Hogan tore off his shirt, he had a Harris shirt underneath and he was like, listen to me, brother. We gotten out of hand here.
I'm going rogue!
Yeah, look. This is all good and well. I said the N-word on tape.
I really shouldn't have done it!
I regret it! I'm a piece of shit, but, like, we've gone too far. This is insane.
This is a Nazi rally. Guys, everybody stop, turn to your left, turn to your right, then look behind you, then look in 14 other directions. You're all fucking Nazis, man!
Yeah. Would have been so cool.
That would have been great.
So instead, we got, him just really trying to tear the shirt off.
And then said it was sad.
We got some more Hinchcliffe, buddy.
Oh, God.
Come on. You know you love comedy.
Oh, God.
It's crazy times we're living in. I mean, all these pointless wars. It is unbelievable what's happening right now. It is incredible. Ukraine versus Russia, Israel, it's like bad soccer games. Who even cares? What are we doing? Why is our money involved in these wars? When it comes to Israel and Palestine, we're all thinking the same thing. Settle your stuff already. Best out of three. Rock, paper, scissors. You know the Palestinians are gonna throw rock every time. But you also know the Jews have a hard time throwing that paper. You know what I'm saying? Alright, we're having fun now. We're cooking. Hillary Clinton said that this is a Nazi rally here today. Can you believe that?
I did not edit that.
I mean,
that's his next thought.
You literally said the Jews in paper line And then you were like, and why would people call this a Nazi rally?
Can you believe it?
That is bold.
Yeah.
That is bold to destroy all of reality with one bad joke and then being an idiot.
I mean, I'm engaging with anti-interventionism the same way that the Nazis did during World War II. And why would they fucking say?
It's
insane that the brain works this way.
It is like, it's like they're fucking with us, man.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not.
No.
They're just fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, what appears to us is people fucking with us, but it's really just, they're fucked, man.
Yeah, I remember this was a conversation that some people had back in the days of the Iraq War.
Yeah.
Was this idea that Ann Coulter was a performance artist.
Yeah.
And, like, it can't possibly be that she believes this shit. She's just a horrible person as a character.
Yeah.
Like, this is a parody of the bloodthirsty, horrible person. And I think a lot of people probably... I don't know how many people took that seriously, but there's people who could probably cope with seeing this as like, oh man, maybe there's a chance she doesn't mean this and this is some kind of
sure
presentation.
Yeah.
And I think that you can get tricked into thinking the same kind of stuff about like a Tony or,
yeah,
or
I
Joe
think there's
Rogan.
There's a strong resistance to like when you need it, there is not enough resistance to considering other people monsters who are psychopaths with nothing really redeemable inside of them, right? But when you should have the belief that there are people often find themselves being like, no, deep down, I'm sure there's, you know, like yeah. For some reason people are like, oh yeah, those guys are monsters. But then whenever they're faced with monsters, they're like, no, deep down on the inside, there's something more. And it's so wild to me that we're backwards on that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are fine. There are monsters.
Well, a moment like this with Tony, where it's like he's saying this thing, we should settle the conflict in the Middle East with rock, paper, scissors because I have a stereotype about the Palestinian people and Jewish people that I want to use.
Right.
And then there's a little bit of a pause and he's like, we're cooking. Hillary says this is a Nazi rally. Can you believe it? The combination of thoughts mm-hmm. and the progression of that is much like you would see in a parody or in some kind of satire.
Yeah.
But like, if you watch, like Colbert at the White House press dinner, like that's satire.
Yeah.
And it's very clear.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Yeah.
There is not satire here. There is just like, oh, that's a kernel of something that would work in a satire.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. This is unintentional and you don't even know that you're being a parody of yourself.
Yes. Yes. In a way. So yes, a good comedian in this political scenario would make the powerful very uncomfortable. And so in a sense, yes, Tony did succeed in that.
In the way that Trump had to issue statements saying, I don't know this guy?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So if it was satire, it almost would have had the same result.
Yeah.
Except he was being sincere about it, which means the joke is mainly on him.
I think the satire, if it was really satire, I think Rogan wouldn't have also come out and been like, I told him not to do that.
Right.
I told him the Puerto Rico joke was a bad idea.
Amazing.
Rogan's distancing himself. It's hilarious.
Amazing.
So I think that as you're watching it and like you're engaging with it as a performer and someone who's done stand up who understands a little bit of like being on stage and all that stuff.
Sure.
You do ask yourself a bit about that possibility that like, is there a second conversation that's happening behind this?
Yeah.
And I think when he got to this part, I was like, nope.
And then the fight, fight, fight. What he did was so cool that Biden got COVID. Oh yeah. Go back. Look at the timeline of everything again. 3 days after that. That means that Biden, he didn't get that from hanging out with sick people. He was in a sterile room in the White House watching blood running down Trump's face as he pumps his fist. Biden's like, oh fuck. Oh God, no. It's true. Trump survived an assassination attempt and Biden got COVID. We vote next week. God voted 3 months ago.
So that part about Biden getting COVID is supposed to be a joke, and though I don't think it's funny or well constructed, I get that it's supposed to be humor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that line about God voting when Trump wasn't killed in Butler, is that comedy? Is it a bold truth teller calling it like it is kind of position to say that the divine force behind the creation of the universe has decided that the guy you like should be president? Divine right? This is not telling truth to power. This is bullshit. And what I think, it hit me in that moment when he's, you know, closing up the set, getting towards the end, and he says this God voted 3 weeks ago bullshit.
Yeah.
I realize these idiots all think that they're David Cross during the Iraq War.
Yeah.
And they're all Dennis Miller.
Yep.
That's what's going on. They all think that they're doing something that is kind of dangerous, a little bit fringe, outside, giving a voice to something. And what they're doing is Dennis Miller.
Yep.
It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So congratulations, Tony.
It is what was the point of having Dennis Miller in that Monday Night Football, fucking broadcast room if it wasn't to teach all of us not to become Dennis Miller?
Yeah.
What was the point?
Culture?
Ugh.
References?
I mean, like, that's what it was about. That was why, I hate to say it, that's why God put him there.
Mm-hmm.
Is to teach us all not to be this man.
I think he's a very interesting cautionary tale. And he is what Tony is. He's what Tony embodies.
Yep.
What so many of these people in comedy, who are doing this bullshit.
I mean,
and
even listening to the lilt, like you're so right, because the rhythm and the lilt of it too is just this condescending, prickish, I'm not going to take responsibility for any of the things that I'm absolutely saying with full conviction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am pretending that I'm some kind of a dissenting renegade voice when all I'm doing is kissing up and reinforcing the status quo in the strictest and most pathetic ways possible.
Yep.
So
the caste system should remain like it is, and that's why I'm a rebel.
They keep canceling me for saying that.
Right? Why won't the king just fucking punish me for telling you all how great the king is and how awesome this kingdom is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tony sucks, and I'm glad that I could get a little bit of that off, get it out.
Ugh.
But Alex also wants to play a little bit of Tucker's speech.
Oh, God.
Who had the greatest speech.
Oh, my God.
Of the night.
Oh,
this
God.
Was not his speech about how daddy's home.
Yeah.
This was not that one.
Okay.
Where he talked about spankings.
I remember that one.
Yeah, that was rough. We might cover that in the future. I think he was losing it a little bit. But here he is from that night, accidentally making a great analogy.
Imagine if you're, and just pause for one moment, imagine you're Donald Trump. You're from New York City, you become famous in New York City, you make your fortune in New York City, and all of a sudden the leadership of New York City decides they're going to destroy you because they don't like your politics. And so they, yeah, boo, imagine if that were you though. And they try and take everything that you have, they try and put you in prison, they try and put your children in prison. If that happened to you, how often do you think you'd be going back to New York City? How about never? And yet he's here. It's like getting thrown out of a bar. And you think to yourself, well, you know, all my friends are in the bar. And you approach the door and there's the bouncer like, you're not allowed in here. But from behind the bouncer, you hear the cheers of your friend. Come on in! And the bouncer hangs his head in shame. He's embarrassed that he's working for the man trying to keep the most popular person out of the bar. And that's Donald Trump back in the city that produced him with no embarrassment at all.
So that's actually a really good analogy because people are almost never thrown out of bars unless they did something to deserve it. The bar wants people there because they make money off you overpaying for drinks. So it's very much against their interest to throw someone out who's not a problem. I've been thrown out of bars and every single time I deserved it.
Yep.
I was never fighting or anything, but one time I did. Like, I was wasted, and I tried to hug a friend of mine, and he moved, and I accidentally knocked over a table.
Time for you to go.
Exactly.
Time for you to go, buddy. You had too much.
Right. I fell through the table.
Yep.
And the bouncer came up, and I was like, Way ahead of
you. Hey, you and me both, sir. I'm out of here.
Nope. Cool.
Would you like me to throw myself out?
Yeah, exactly.
I will happily do so.
I've been a door guy at a bar, and it was not easy to get me to kick you out. There were some hard lines, like harassing people or fighting, but the bar that I worked at least, if the bouncer said you were out, you were not getting back in, and you had it coming. This is also a great analogy because the audience is like the drunk asshole's friends who are still at the bar. Trump's been kicked out because of his behavior, and the friends are all too drunk and caught up in their friend's cult of personality to realize that he deserved to be kicked out of the bar. Maybe the next morning they'll wake up with a hangover and it'll hit them that their friend was a dick, or maybe they'll keep defending him and grow resentful of that bar that was just following the rules and protecting other customers. But that's a question for the next morning. As it stands now, everyone's drunk except the bouncer, and they are in on it. They love it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fun fantasy where you just force your way back in and you humiliate the bouncer, but in the real world, you're gonna get your ass kicked. A lot of bouncers I've known, maybe not everybody, but a lot of them I know are just pretty nice people who are waiting for someone to fuck with them so they could kick their ass.
Yeah.
That's a character type for a reason. But all this kind of works as a metaphor. Trump has violated the rules of the country and has been thrown out of the bar by polite society. He wants to force his way back in and take over the bar, and his friends slash supporters, they're all wasted, and they're enabling him in his effort. Tucker is stupid and an asshole, but he stumbled onto something decent here in terms of a metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like if he got kicked out of the bar and all of his friends went with him, and then the next morning they bought the bar and turned it into a place where you could behave like Trump did, all the time. And then it turns out that nobody wants to live in that bar.
Yeah.
Cause it's awful.
Yeah.
People who are decent.
Other bars are going to get a lot of business.
It is so crazy. It is truly crazy that it's like laws are there for people who just don't understand that you're fucking up the bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't need a law saying something like if I'm fucked up and I don't know it, that's when I need to get kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if I should know it whenever I'm not fucked up.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yeah. It's a grand entitlement, really. That he's expressing. It's like, there's no circumstance wherein metaphorically I should be kicked out of this bar.
Yep.
The bar is always wrong to kick me out.
Yep.
I'm like, nah.
You have to be raised a certain kind of rich to believe shit like that.
Do you think Tucker's ever been thrown out of a bar?
It's lucky that everybody in the Republican Party that's leading everything has been raised exactly that kind of rich.
Yeah, Tucker got kicked out of a wine bar.
Yeah.
Some five-star restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, he probably has his own wine bar inside of his fucking house because he can't get kicked out of it.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, we have one last clip here, and, it's because we spent too much time talking about Tony Hinchcliffe.
Well, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
And, Alex, did not charm me.
Also, I am planning, I'll be announcing it tomorrow, starting later in the week, and then right through next week on election night, we're gonna be doing special live nighttime shows here out of the InfoWar studios that can be shut down in just 15 days, and out of the new studios at the Alex Jones Network. And that is at AJN Live on X. Follow us there at AJN Live on X or alexjones.network for the website with a lot of new stuff being added to that. All right.
So which studios does InfoWars own and which one does the fake company own? Are they both the same? Or what do you? Could you please differentiate this stuff? Because I think it's actually very important.
I'm willing to entertain a Three's Company style line of tape down the wall all the way across the, I will accept that.
Man, and if he did that and I was Chase,
I
could not resist doing a two-face.
Oh, absolutely.
Thing. I would be riding the line.
Jumping on a back and forth, having one face on one. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. I would turn to the side.
100%. It would be amazing. It would be the best.
This would be as good as Hulk Hogan having a Harris
shirt.
There's
so many ways to be creative and fun. And ultimately, these people are the opposite of creativity and fun.
Yep. That is definitely true.
Ugh.
And I think that it's, I mean, obviously not a surprise, but Alex is trying to use the excitement around the election or whatever subsidiary attention he can get to drive people to the new fake site.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's expected, but, I mean, I don't know. All this shit should have been stopped long ago.
I mean, hey, you know what? That should be on our gravestones. All this shit should have been stopped a long time ago.
Yeah.
Listen, this isn't even on us. Mm-hmm. I don't know why everybody's taking it like it's our fault. This should have been stopped way before any of us were born. We're all stuck with it.
If we get to the point where Tony Hinchcliffe is speaking at Madison Square yep. Garden at a Trump rally, we fucked up so far back.
So much further back.
There's so many steps that led us here.
Yep.
And we can't even imagine and effect that led us here.
Honestly, you know, sometimes you think about how do we fix stuff and it's like, well, okay, let's start just pulling at the thread of where one problem began. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, ah, shit, we should never have left the goddamn trees.
Mm.
Should have stayed up there. I wish I was a monkey man.
Early career Rogan would have agreed with you.
I'm telling you.
Anyway, we'll be back with another episode as we get closer and closer to election 2024 and Alex's auction. There's just a lot going on. And we'll carry on seeing how Tony is dealing.
I guess.
But until then, we have a website.
Indeed we do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I am the Mysterious Professor.
Woo, yeah, woo, yeah, woo.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.